Thank you to everyone for coming today. It's great to see so many people interested in these issues. And I'm going to take a slightly different focus than my colleagues who have presented before, and I'm going to bring us down from the county and state level down to the household level. And how do we engage households in adopting climate-friendly behaviors? And my background is in social and behavioral sciences, so I will focus on the risk perception attitude framework, which is a focus on the psychosocial factors for predicting adoption at the household level. And I'd also like to acknowledge my co-authors, who were instrumental in mentoring me through this process and in contributing to this presentation, particularly Rajiv Ramal, who is my PhD advisor. And I'd like to take a quick second to let you know I'll be using the term climate-friendly behaviors a lot in my presentation. And to define that for you, I'm talking about behaviors that individuals can engage in to mitigate the impacts of climate change. For example, using reusable containers and recycling, reducing household energy consumption, things like that. I have no relationships to disclose. So to give you a brief overview of my presentation, first I'm going to discuss why is it important to focus on the household level for engaging populations in climate-friendly behaviors change. Then I will give an overview of the risk perception attitude framework approach, which has been used for communication campaigns for a variety of health behaviors, followed by a summary of my research methods, results, and a discussion of what are the implications of my findings for communication interventions to increase adoption of climate-friendly behaviors at the household level. And lastly, I'll discuss a few limitations and some future directions for research. So first, why is a focus on the household level so important in the U.S. for mitigating climate change? Well, first, direct household energy use accounts for a significant proportion of the CO2 emissions in the U.S., nearly 40%. And one study showed that the national adoption of climate-friendly behaviors at the household level could reduce household direct emissions by 20%, which would be over 7% of the U.S. national emissions. So that would be a substantial improvement. Moreover, in some settings, there's an absence of government mandates and guidance about climate change. So localized movements to engage in climate-friendly behaviors, such as household-level action, could pave the way for higher-level activities like support for policy changes. So it could be instrumental in more bottom-up approaches for policy change. In the broader behavior change literature, households have seldom been the unit of intervention. But for climate change behaviors, we believe that, well, many decisions are made at the household level, and many of these behaviors are enacted at the family level. Therefore, households are both an important and an effective level at which we can intervene to mitigate climate change. However, householders often lack accurate, accessible, and actionable information for engaging in climate-friendly behaviors. So clearly, greater work is needed to effectively promote adoption of these behaviors at the household level. In social marketing campaigns to change health-related behaviors, there is a lot of focus on the segmentation of individuals, but not much emphasis on segmenting households. For climate change behaviors, we think it would make sense to segment by households, and so we decided to use the risk framework, a risk perception attitude framework approach for doing so. This is an audience segmentation tool that's been used for communication campaigns for a variety of health behaviors, including HIV prevention, breast cancer prevention, and workplace safety. So it's a variety of behaviors. Basically, for this, you assess the individual's perceptions of risk and their efficacy beliefs, and you group them accordingly by having an indifference, avoidance, proactive, or responsive attitude. So to give you an example, individuals who perceive a high level of risk from climate change, that is, they perceive it will cause a great deal of harm to themselves, to their community, to plant and animal species in the world, etc. And they also have strong efficacy beliefs. This means that they believe strongly that human action to mitigate climate change, such as recycling, can have a significant impact in mitigating the harms from climate change. And these individuals are labeled as being very responsive to a communication campaign. To give you one more example, individuals who perceive a high level of risk from climate change, so they perceive a great deal of harm coming from climate change, but they do not have strong beliefs that human action can mitigate climate change. They are classified as having avoidance attitudes. And so this framework posits that people with heightened risk perceptions and strong efficacy beliefs, so the responsive group, they are more motivated to act on these attitudes and to engage in climate-friendly behaviors. This is compared to people who perceive a low level of risk from climate change, and they have weak beliefs in the efficacy of human action. This is the indifference group. They are the least likely to engage in climate-friendly behaviors. So you can use this framework to segment your audience, your households, to see how can you target people to increase their perceived risk and their efficacy beliefs to get them to engage in climate-friendly behaviors. So this framework has been very useful to study a variety of health behaviors, as I mentioned, but it has not been used yet to study environmental behaviors or household-level behaviors. And we know relatively little about the association between parents and children's risk perceptions and efficacy beliefs. And we believe this is an important association to look at in order to understand household-level behaviors, because many households are composed of both parents and children. So our research questions were, within households, what is the association between the parents' and the adolescents' attitudes, as defined by the RPA framework? And then we also wanted to know, after you control for demographic and socioeconomic factors, what is the association between household-level intentions to engage in climate-friendly behaviors in the future with the adolescent and parent group membership? So this study is part of a larger study. The respondents were members of a nationally representative panel recruited and maintained by the research firm Knowledge Networks. Respondents were recruited using random digit dialing and address-based sampling. These cross-sectional data used in our sub-study were collected in two waves in 2009 and 2010. For the sub-study, parents of adolescents aged 13 to 17 years were randomly selected to participate in the sub-study, and the completion rates for the sub-study of those selected were moderate for each wave. So to measure their perceived level of risk from climate change, we asked 8 questions about how much global warming would harm different individuals and groups. For example, how much would global warming harm their family, or how much would it harm people in developing countries? To measure their efficacy beliefs, we asked 2 questions about how much would their energy-saving actions and those of most people in the U.S. would be, how effective would they be in reducing the effects of global warming? And we had moderate to high internal reliability for both of these measures. And we classified the parents and children into those RPA groups that we saw earlier by their median scores on these 2 measures. We also asked them how often they usually engaged in a series of 11 climate-friendly behaviors. And these behaviors included recycling, taking public transportation, reducing their energy consumption in their household. Parent-child dyads were aggregated into the habitual household-level behaviors. And our main outcome of interest were household-level intentions to engage in these same 11 behaviors in the next year. So we asked them whether they intended to engage in them less often, the same, or more often in the next year. And there was high internal reliability for both of these measures. So overall, we had a sample size of 523 parent-adolescent pairs. About half were female, and the parents were relatively well-educated and had a relatively high income. So first, where do the parents and adolescents in our sample fall in their attitudes about climate change? About a third of the sample had an indifference attitude towards climate change. So that is, they perceived a low level of risk. They did not believe it would greatly harm themselves or anyone in their community, for example. And they also had weak beliefs that human action could mitigate climate change. And another third of our sample were in the responsive group, so they perceived a high level of risk from climate change, but they also believed strongly that human action could mitigate climate change. And another third, the rest of the third of our sample, was almost evenly split between the proactive and the avoidance groups. So how do the parents and the adolescents correspond in their attitudes? So here we're looking at parents' group membership and how adolescent membership corresponded to it. Overall, there's a high level of correspondence, about 50%. The bolded diagonal is the correspondence. So for example, of the parents who believed that there is a low level of risk from climate change and held weak beliefs in the efficaciousness of human action, the indifference group, of those parents, 59% had adolescents who felt the same way. So they tended to have adolescents with the same attitudes. And you can see the same for the responsive group as well. There is a high level of correspondence. However, there was a lot of discordance between the proactive and the avoidance groups. So in other words, parents who perceived a low level of risk from climate change, they and they had strong beliefs in the efficacy of human action. They tended to have adolescents who felt the same way in terms of their risk perception, that there's a low level of risk, but the adolescents seemed to compensate and have stronger efficacy beliefs than their parents. About 43% of the parents who were proactive had adolescents who were indifferent, and almost 36% of the avoidance parents had adolescents who were different. So overall, what you can take from this table is that the households are meaningful units of analysis and for segmentation for the communication campaign. So we also did a multivariable linear regression. We controlled for all of these factors shown in the table, and our main outcome of interest were the intentions at the household level to engage in these behaviors in the future. So first you can see that their current engagement in behaviors positively predicted intentions to increase their engagement or of these behaviors in the future. So once you can get people to start engaging in these behaviors, it's likely that they'll continue or they'll intend to continue engaging in the future. Also, if you look at the adolescent group membership, you can see that the adolescents who are proactive and responsive were more likely to be in households with greater intentions to engage in climate-friendly behaviors in the future. So in other words, adolescents who have a strong efficacy beliefs about the ability or the effectiveness of human action to mitigate climate change, no matter what their perceived level of risk from climate change, they were more likely to be in households that will engage in those behaviors in the future. And after we control for the children's attitudes, we can look at the remaining variance explained by the parents. You can see that being proactive nearly reached statistical significance, but the only one to really reach significance was the responsive group. So parents who perceive a high level of risk from climate change and also hold strong efficacy beliefs, they are in households that have increased intentions to engage in these behaviors in the future. So we saw that there were overall two-thirds of the parents and adolescents were categorized into the indifference and the responsive categories. And this is interesting because these two groups are polar opposite in the beliefs. I mean, they believe the exact opposite. And so that just shows that communication campaigns need to be tailored for these specific segments of the population. The same message will not work to engage people in climate change behaviors for people with indifference attitudes versus responsive attitudes. We also saw that about half of the parents and adolescents corresponded in their attitudes regarding climate change. And there are also some discrepancies that we saw, and these discrepancies were informative. It seems that the parents and the children matched in their perceived level of risk from climate change, but if one had strong efficacy beliefs, the other had weaker efficacy beliefs. So for climate change research, there's a need to focus not only on the adult in the household and their attitudes, but to also focus on the children and the concordance and discordance in their views. And the last point that we saw was that greater level of household intentions to engage in behaviors in the future was associated with being proactive or responsive in adolescents and responsive in parents. So in other words, for adolescents, regardless of their risk perceptions, the strong efficacy beliefs appeared to be positively related to household level intentions to engage in these behaviors. And in contrast, parents must perceive a high level of risk as well as feel efficacious in order to engage in these behaviors. So it just shows the importance of holding strong beliefs in the efficacy of human action in order to change, to engage people in the behaviors. So some implications for communication campaigns. One is that we should focus on the relationship between parents and their children in order to bring about positive behavioral change. The correspondence or lack thereof in attitudes may be an important starting point for promoting household level behavior change. So campaigns can therefore focus on the family as the unit for an intervention while taking into consideration collective risk perceptions and efficacy beliefs. Our findings showed that the household level intention is positively associated with adolescents who hold greater efficacy beliefs. Therefore, media messages that aim to increase household level sustainability efforts can emphasize the efficacy of these climate-friendly behaviors to adolescents. We also showed that audiences can be segmented based on their risk perceptions and efficacy beliefs for this climate change issue. So for example, audience members lacking in efficacy can be targeted with information about how to overcome barriers to action and what actions provide the greatest impact. And it should be noted that we did not find any associations with the demographic variables. Therefore, it may be more fruitful to focus on psychosocial factors when you're segmenting these audiences for climate change behaviors and communication strategies. So one limitation of the study was that the data were cross-sectional in nature. However, theory and evidence support our assumption that attitudes lead to behavioral intentions. Also, there may have been some social desirability bias because of the self-reported nature of the data. However, we do not believe that these biases operated differently between the four RPA groups. Therefore, it wasn't a major concern with our results. And last, our operationalization of efficacy beliefs focused on response efficacy, which is how effective do you believe these actions are in mitigating climate change. However, future research could look at the role of self-efficacy in these behavioral intentions, such as people who don't feel as confident that they can engage in these behaviors, they might be less likely to engage in the behaviors. Also, future research could look at the attitude discrepancies that point to a possible compensation effect for efficacy beliefs between parents and children. Perhaps a future research question can look at these discrepant diets more specifically to see where they differ in their attitudes and behaviors. Also, future research could examine the households with homogeneous attitudes versus the heterogeneous attitudes to see if different communication approaches are needed for these households. And finally, we can extend this household level work to other domains. I just want to acknowledge the DI of the study and our funding sources. And thank you very much. Is there time for questions? Okay. Any questions? Oh, yeah?
I'm kind of curious, you know, they see these same distribution of risk perception patterns when they talk about secondhand smoke and noise pollution, all of the other environmental exposures that we've been looking at thus far. I think it would be kind of interesting to go back and look at the cohort to see what their risk perception of other environmental threats are, to kind of get to further segment the population to see just exactly where the teachable moment exists. If it's just in their persona to be well-read and be a little bit more open-minded to risk perception, you know, behavior that will follow, you know, with the next environmental threat that appears, part of my former life was with that local health department, and all of y'all did was so applicable. Go home and do it, you know, start something on Monday.
Yeah.
Practical.
Yeah, I agree. It's I think all the things that we've talked about are things that people can take home with them and apply to other issues as well, at least for my research. Yeah?
Great presentation.
Thank you.
I was just curious if you could elaborate on the language you used when you were describing climate change. Did you call it climate change or did you call it global warming?
That's a good question.
Sure.
So first, this was collected online, not by telephone. They sampled by telephone, but also addresses, and they provided computers for people who did not have computers in order to make sure that they could participate in the study. And they used the words global warming in the survey questions. Right. Yes, yeah. I think that they based that off of I'm not sure. Maybe some formative research. I'm not too sure. Thank you for the question.
Were the survey responses given any information about how the behaviors related to climate? I mean, were they just told these are, you know, some behaviors that can help to mitigate climate change, or were they given any more detailed information about the relationship between the behaviors and the outcome?
No, I don't believe that they were given information about that. I think they just said these are some, what's this exact survey question? I wasn't involved with designing the survey, but I don't believe that they did any education around these issues. That answers your question. Thank you.
So we have a few minutes left. I'd like to thank all of our presenters this morning.